And welcome back to the as of yet untitled, unnumbered Punk News podcast. And today is going to be somewhat of a different episode, or a slightly different episode. First of all, it's features editor John Gentile, and I am here with regular podcaster Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet.
Hello, friends.
We are now basking in the warmth of post episode 500.
No, wait. So what's this with not knowing what number it is? Isn't it 50? Explain to me. Why isn't it 501?
Well, it might be. I'm not sure, because Adam and I had big battle plans after 500. But in true Chaos Punk News style, and despite the fact that we pushed back episode 500 literally like 10 weeks, we're not actually ready for our radical changes, which actually are minute and not radical at all. So Adam said, maybe we should skip this week. But I honestly hate skipping weeks, because we haven't ever skipped a week in 500 episodes, and I don't want to do it now. And also, this was like a big week for news. Yeah. And so I said, well, let's just call 501. And he's like, well, what if we call it post 500 post show or something? I said, well, that's fine. So
or
this might be
500. Or keep with the decimals. Maybe it's like 500.2, 500.3.
I'm always down for the wacky numbering system. So we'll see. Hallie, as you know, in a partnership, everything's give and take. And I think Adam has a definite idea of how he wants to number it. And so I'm not going to fight that one. I'm just going to let that one ride out how it rides out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, I do.
And so, listen, so here we are, Punk News Podcast. Second thing is, Adam was not here right now because he's got job issues. One of his clients' websites isn't working or something. So I don't know what website guys do. I guess they code or open up the back of people's computers or something. So I was doing something with computers. So we might jump in later. So the duo style is not unheard of on the Punk News Podcast, but I believe this is the first duo style John and Hallie. Hallie, I don't think it's just been you and me. Mano y mano.
Never. I'm into it.
So listen, here we are. You can always use it at podcast@punknews.org. We got a lot of mail this week, and we got a lot actually. Before I even get into the mail, Hallie, we've got a lot to talk about this week. And one thing though is we've got a lot of bummer news to discuss. But I think we gotta take it head on. You know what I mean? We gotta take it. Well, I mean, we can't ignore it. You know what I'm saying?
No. Let's get in it.
We're gonna take it head on, and then we're gonna do some happiness. But before that, we're going to hit some mail, and then we're going to just reflect on 500 quickly. This is from Lewis. Lewis says, hi, my name is Lewis, and I've been listening to the podcast for quite a few years, and I'm still looking forward to episode 500. I wrote a letter about the adolescent special back in 2018, and John addressed it on one of the shows. I played drums in Hassle, a band from New Jersey, and we just put out an album called Unsweet. We just started mixing it as the pandemic struck, which brought us many difficulties, so we decided to release it ourselves. Would you play a track on the podcast? And so we're going to play one of Lewis's tracks from his band Hassle, I guess at the end of the show. We got another email from the Debaser, and here's what the Debaser had to say. Hey, Punk News Podcast, I love listening to you guys bullshit and recommend great music. I just turned 30, and I was wondering if you would play a song from my old band I think you might enjoy. All the Chemicals by Step on the People. So the Debaser, I'll play one of those tracks. And then he also recommended some stuff. He recommended a band called Antimatter. He recommended a band called Beeman. He recommended a band called Vidara Death Ray. And he also recommended a new wave band called The Squids from 1981. And I think they're from Hawaii. And I checked them out. And actually, they're pretty rad. So I actually might play one of those songs, too, at the end of the show. So at the end of the show, we're going to play a track by The Hassles, by Step on the People, and probably a track by a band called The Squids, a long-lost new wave band. Hallie Bullet, I can't stand generic, like, street punk. I can't stand generic Clash rip-off punk. I can't stand generic Sex Pistol-y type punk, although I love the Sex Pistol and I love the Clash. But for some reason, like new wave, even if it's just okay new wave, I'm like, yeah, this is real good. I'm very accepting of standard new wave, more accepting than I am of standard street punk.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I guess just because – well, I guess because like with street punk, it's like, okay, you're not really soccer hooligans drinking every day and fist fighting. You live in Connecticut or something like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like with Clash rip-off fans, it's like I'm pretty sure you're not like part of like Grenadian rebels blowing up like federal buildings or whatever. So it's all put on. But with New Wave – the key component is this is an artifice. We're being purposely weird and phony because that's kind of the angle of the genre. So maybe that's it.
Oh, yeah. No, that kind of explains it to me. I mean, also maybe just like in the world that we like circulate in, maybe we're just subjected to more bad fake street punk, you know, than bad fake new wave.
Very true. So you can always use the podcast at punknews.org. So right now we're in the fallout or the warm glow of Punk News Podcast 500. Halle Bullet, did we kill it? Did we squelch it? Did we show everyone how it's done, or did we just show off? Do we have a great time, or do we make fools of ourselves? Did we rock, or did we suck? What's your perspective of episode 500?
I mean, I think honestly we rocked because the lineup of guests was amazing, and I felt like in terms of like our end of it, I felt like we had our shit together. Like anyone that was like the head interviewer on a thing, like I felt like had their stuff together and had cool questions to ask. I think it's just, you know, when you're interviewing artists, like especially, I don't know. I mean, you can't always control like your interviewee, right? You know, you can't force them to stay on topic. You can't force them to give interesting, concise answers. You can't force them to not be like sort of like crazy, or you know what I mean? Like I felt like on our end we did a good job, and I felt like, you know, maybe just some of the people that were on maybe just were a little long-winded or didn't know how to stay on point with what they were talking about. What did you think about it?
You know, I hadn't really considered that aspect. You might be right about that. It was like four and a half hours, but it didn't feel that way because like whenever I throw a show or do one of these kind, like we were literally fighting the clock since the get go. So it doesn't feel like 4 hours. It feels like an hour and a half because I'm constantly checking the time, you know. And so I think it went really well. I'm really proud of how it went. I'm really proud of the guests. I'm really proud of the variety that we had. I mean, Jackie the Joke Man, like
he was the surprise hit, right?
And he really saved that after because we were stumbling on disaster, you know. And I'm like, oh my god, he's gonna be. And then he just came through, and it's unfair to expect a musician or an artist, whoever, to be who you want them to be, because when you listen to an album, you're not really getting the whole person. You're getting like 4% of the person, you know. But honestly, like Jackie the Joke Man and everybody, they were pretty much exactly who I wanted them to be. Like Jackie was just – he was the Joke Man, you know. Yeah. Dan Burke was pretty crazy. Keith Morris was like super crazy, which I loved, you know.
Super crazy, but I'm with you. It was like sort of pleasing how crazy he was.
I love Blag Guy. I will defend Blag till almost the end. I felt as though Blag might be. If you sat down and talked with Blag, I think most people would agree with what he had to say. But I feel he's getting engaged in a culture war that he doesn't necessarily need to get engaged with, because he's not going to get anything out of battling that war, especially since the two main guys have jumped the ship. Do you agree?
Wait, no. Just tell me which aspect of what he was saying you felt like was like him getting into a culture war.
Blag feels as though the Burger Record guys are getting a raw deal.
I thought that was the guy from the Dwarves that said that. Am I completely spacing out?
Yes, Blag from the Dwarves.
Oh, I'm an idiot. Who was the guy from Guar? What's wrong with me?
No, that for me that was the biggest surprise. A Blothard of the Berserker.
He was great.
I could not believe the level. Honestly, I've known all along that Guar is smart, but he's a doctor. Well, no, he's not a doctor. His slave is a doctor, but it's rubbing off apparently. And his eloquence, but also I was really surprised because I think he has a different perspective than Odorous would have, who's now passed away. His perspective was maybe it's time for Guar to change, which actually really shocked me. That shocked me.
I loved your conversation with him. I thought it was amazing. Yes, I'm so sorry. I was having a brain fart, but I agree with you that the Burger Records stuff was actually upsetting to me, and I didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to like cut in, because you were interviewing him and you were having a, you know, you were having a conversation with him. And, you know, I don't want to sour your or Punk News's relationship with the musicians that you have access to. But that was, I really had to bite my tongue on that, because that was his comments, I thought, were kind of part of the problem, to be honest. Like, if we're talking about this whole like male, like toxic in music, I really felt like his comments were pretty emblematic of really a big part of what the problem is.
I have to speak very specifically here, because I don't want my words to be misconstrued.
Yeah.
I can see where you're coming from, and I think basing off what Blagg said in that one conversation, I would agree with you. However, I've interviewed Blagg many times, and I feel as though he's purposely being provocative, and I don't think he's like saying something he doesn't believe, but I think if people sat down and talked with him, they wouldn't find his views to be as shocking as they might think they would be. That being said, the way he articulated himself on the podcast, I think, was purposely inflammatory, and I'm not sure that's the best route for him to take at this point.
Go on.
The point being is I've been friendly with Blagg for many years, and he might say some things I disagree with, but I'm not going to turn my back on Blagg unless he did something really, really crazy, which I don't think he's even come close to as of yet. I don't know if I agree with everything that he said, but I appreciate that he's saying it, if you will.
No, I think it's important for people to say what they think. But, you know, I think my main problem with it was for a guy, a musician who's successful in the music industry and has respect and is a man, to say, like, I know these guys and, you know, I don't agree with what's being said about them. It's like, I just think you have to leave open the possibility that your experience with these people is not the same experience that a young woman who is a fan of music and has no power in this, you know, world that we all, you know, rotate in, and, you know, and is young and impressionable. I just think you have to understand that maybe your experience of people is not the same as someone else's experience, you know, especially when you do you know what I'm saying? Like that was where I really felt like, it doesn't matter if he thinks the guys from Burger Records are good guys in a way, because I just, you know, he's really coming at his relationship with them from such a different angle than these women that are coming out and speaking. So that was where I sort of felt like the comments were kind of almost naive. Do you know what I mean? Like, and I do think there's some naivete when people don't want to look these kind of problems in the eye. People are just, they want to, the things that are important to them, labels, bands, people, they want to hold that stuff. So it's so like precious to them that they can't just kind of like take a step back and say, you know what, like my relationship to this thing isn't the only way that it exists. I don't know if I'm being articulate, but I think you know what I'm saying.
I do. I don't know that I disagree. I think I agree with pretty much all of that. I guess my main concern with Blagg is I feel as though he's jumping onto a ship that is going down, and the captains have jumped. So he's not helping out his friends. So why get involved in that? You know what I mean? But listen, that's why he's Blagg Dahlia. Not to focus on Blagg for the whole thing, because a couple other things we're talking about, 500. I will say, to Blagg's credit, he's put out more – actually, the OCs have put out more records on Burger than he has. But he's put out a lot of records on Burger. He's been around a long time, and no one's come out with any accusations against him. So there is something to be said. There's talking, and there's action. I don't know if I disagree with anybody here. Well, I do disagree with some things I'm trying to get out of this jam, Hallie. I like Blagg. I agree with him on many things. I disagree with him on some things. I don't know if this is the battle for him to pick. And what you said, I agree with the majority of what you said. Yeah. However, Jesse Michaels and Marissa Paternoster, two angels. I mean, can we talk about two angels or what?
Yeah, lovely people. Just lovely.
And Dan Burt was – anyway, so you asked me what did I think of it, and I'm just patting myself on the back.
It was really impressive. It was a cool show.
I think it was cool. This is what I'm thinking of going forward. I don't know if we're going to do call-in shows again because we've done about four of them, and I don't think we can top that to call-in wise. Like the point of that was the access, 5 hours of phone. Oh, speaking of which, Daryl Hall, the man, so cool, Daryl Hall, Steve Ignorant, so cool. So
yeah,
I mean it's great. Hattie Bullitt, I whine a lot, and I'm like, somebody's too cool to do an interview with Punk News. But, I mean, if Daryl Hall is there, if Keith Morris is there, I can't ever complain. Like what do I care if Flavor of the Minute Jimmy doesn't want to be on our show? We had Keith Morris and Daryl Hall on the same show. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely. Yeah.
So here's what I'm thinking of going forward. I don't know if we'll do a call-in again because I think this was the pinnacle of the call-ins, and I'm glad that it was. The main thing that I'm thinking about, and I know Adam's thinking about this, is production quality. Like, how professional do we want to make our podcast? Our podcast is pretty ramshackle. but is that a deficit or a benefit? You know. And the other thing to consider is, can we make this bigger than it is? We do have a significant number of listeners, like a real number. But can we like make it more appealing to a broader audience, or is John, Adam, and Hallie talking about the news of the week at Punk News? Are we reaching all the audience that we're going to reach? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't know if you have a perspective on that. Like, do you think we should improve our quality, our sound quality, or our prep? Like, I was actually just on a podcast like earlier this week, and they were like, all right, we're gonna do this and we're gonna do that, and then if this happens we'll do this, and if this happens we're gonna do that, what do you think they're doing this? And on the Punk News podcast we're like, all right, let's record, here we go, you know. So I what's your perspective, Hallie?
I like both. I mean I think there's like a middle ground. Like I love that it's people talking, and I listen to a lot of the episodes that I'm not on, and what I really enjoy is that I just feel like I'm in a room with other punks just talking about music. Like, I really, really enjoy it. I listened to, I think mostly by accident, I started an episode that I was on and right off the bat, like, heard my own audio and thought my audio was terrible. And I found it a little embarrassing. So I don't know if I sound any better this week, but like, I'm trying to, you know, my husband is a podcaster, so I'm like on his gear now rather than just sitting in my living room, like on my laptop with my headphones and my dumb like headphone mic. You know what I mean? Like, I do think it's like, it can be, I do think it can be it can be uninviting, especially to new listeners when audio is bad. I think it can just be like a blockade. You know, it just doesn't, it's not pleasing to listen to bad audio. So I know I tried to, maybe I'll listen back to this episode and make sure that I actually improved things. But I think it's, you know, especially we're talking about music, like we're people that are taught, we appreciate sound. So I think sound is, I don't have to think it has to be a super profesh, but I think like really bad sound, at least for me, I was like, okay, I need to avoid that. when you and Adam are like talking about the podcast and like whether you want to polish it up or whether you like how scrappy it is, like, what do you guys think?
Honestly, we've both been sitting on the pot and haven't been shitting or getting off for the past year and a half. And we really want to make a decision. The point being, after 500, the idea is we're not going to radically change the program, but perhaps we're going to tune up things that we need to tune up. And that's what we're going to do going forward, you know. So I think I agree that audio needs to be improved. And a lot of that's probably on me because I just record off my laptop, honestly. I do have I was using a Snowball for a while, but I was sounding so much worse with the Snowball. But I think that's because the producer at the time we had like did all these weird filters, and it made it sound like really weird, you know. I guess we probably should include the audio. I don't know if we can make the show more interesting, or maybe it's interesting enough. I mean, it's interesting to me, but maybe that's just because I'm on it. You know what?
Well, but like I'm saying, like on the weeks that I'm not on, I find the conversations interesting. I do.
Sadly, I think we should improve sound quality on the show. And that's that. Hallie, do you have a song to play?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. I was a big Cayetana fan. And, you know, Cayetana is not playing anymore or right now. But Augusta has a new band called Gladdy, and they, you know, I've been feeling so bad for bands that released stuff, you know, right as COVID was happening. So Gladdy put out a new record right at the end of February. I think they got to do a little bit of touring before things shut down. But yeah, I have been thinking about it and thinking like, what can I do to like help musicians that just like put stuff out and then like didn't get to tour to support it? And, you know, I can't do very much, but I can play a song by Gladdy that I like. And so they put out, an album called Safe Sins on Lame-O Records, you know, out of Philly. And, and that was in late February. And then they have a new EP called Orange Peels that just came out. And but I really like this song off of the album that came out in February. So this song is by Gladdy, and it's called When You Leave the Sun. On the bright days, I can see the light. When the chemicals blend just right, we separate.
Doing When You Leave the Sun. I saw Gladdy live twice. Real cool band. I dig them a lot. A cool selection there. All right, Hallie, listen, we've been joking, laughing, but we got to get into some heavy duty stuff right now. And we're going to do the not cool stuff, and then we're going to do the cool stuff. First off of the uncool stuff, we alluded to it earlier, Burger Records is no more. The story itself is kind of a complicated story. The way it unfolded was kind of complicated. But what happened basically, and I'm going to tell it chronologically because it was confusing for a lot of people. Originally, two bands were accused of sexual misconduct, specifically sexual contact with minors, I guess, if that's how you want to phrase it. And then Burger Records issued a statement that says, "We don't stand with abusers, we support women." But that seemed to anger a whole bunch of people. And at first I was mad because I'm like, people were like, you know, down with Burger, down with Burger. And I'm like, down with Burger? Like, two bands on the label are creepy? It's like, they've put out over 1,500 records. The label is not responsible for the bad actions of everybody on the label, you know, especially when you got 1,500 records on the label. But then more and more information kept coming out. More and more bands were accused of sexual misconduct. Swimmers, Cosmonauts, Growlers, a whole bunch of bands were accused of being either sexual encounters with minors or it's tough to phrase this, and I guess it's because no one's really certain on how to phrase it or what the issue is, but basically 30-ish year old men using their influence, I guess, on 18 and 19 year old girls or younger, with the impact of alcohol in the mix. And further, the accusation came out that the Burger Record shop itself, which had a lot of concerts, it was well known that there was 30, 35-year-old dudes giving beer to 18 to 19-year-old girls and then taking them in the back room or taking them in the van and doing, well, who knows what, you know. And so that raises a lot of questions as to what is – well, raises a lot of questions. But how that relates to the two Burger Records guys themselves. If you don't know Burger – actually, I should have said who Burger Records was. Burger Records is a label. They've been around about 10 years or so, maybe a little bit longer. It's two guys. It's Lee and Sean. And I thought Sean was the main guy, but as it turns out, Lee appears to be the main guy. And the attack leveled against Burger was that they were fully aware that this, I guess – unwelcome atmosphere was going on at the shop and were, quote, fine with it, or at least didn't do anything to stop it. So what Burger Records did was they put out a statement that said, Lee's stepping down from Burger Records completely. Sean's going to be in a transitional statement while a young lady, or a lady, I should say, is being brought in to run the label going forward. And then that really rankled a lot of people. A lot of people got mad about that. They're like, you can't. Oh, and they said they were going to come out with a label called Burger Girl, which people were like, you can't just put out a label called Burger Girl and pretend everything's okay. And then it came out there were accusations. I'm not going to get too detailed about it because it was really unclear. But there were some accusations against Lee, not against Sean, which kind of explains why he was stepping down. So the next day or so, Burger Records just said, We're closing shop. We're sorry. And the record shop itself at least was closed for a little while. I don't know if the record shop is still closed or not. Meanwhile, a lot of bands that were on Burger were cited for misconduct. And some bands even, I guess, stated they were guilty of misconduct themselves. Quite surprisingly, No Bunny said, I'm not going to be No Bunny anymore because I've been sleazy. Even Savonis, who's not been on Burger, of Nation of Ulysses, he said, I've been sleazy, so I'm sorry about that. Swimmers, the son of the guy from Green Day, and a whole bunch of other bands. So, I mean, like, I've never seen a label collapse so fast. A lot of people are confused and disappointed, and I guess not the worst aspect, but a sad aspect is, unlike where a label runs out of money or like look out where it's mismanaged or closes up, to a degree, many people are viewing the entire Burger history as being tainted. And of course, I think you can't argue that there are many, many, many amazing records on Burger. And so now they all sort of have that stink to them, if you will. So I've got a lot of thoughts on this. Hallie, I don't know what your perspective is right now.
I kind of just want to hear your take on it. I'm with you. I have a lot of thoughts, and the whole thing is such a bummer.
Okay, here's my thoughts, and I'm going to preface this by saying I'm not arguing I'm absolutely right. I'm not arguing that anyone else is wrong. These are the thoughts I'm having. I think what we all need to acknowledge in the past 2 or 3 or 4 years, social mores are changing, and terms are very liquid right now, and words are very liquid right now. I mean, they don't. A lot of words have various meanings to different people. So as we come to, I guess, what is generally accepted as right and wrong or what words specifically mean, people shouldn't bite on each other or snap on each other when we're all trying to honestly figure out what's going on. Because I think pretty much everyone can agree, in regards to Burger, in regards to the world, no one really knows what's going on and we're all very confused. So I'm going to preface that by saying this. These are my thoughts. And I'm willing to change my thoughts. I'm not saying I'm definitely right. This is how I'm feeling based on the information I have right now. But I'm willing to have my mind changed. First of all, if you're doing something with a 17-year-old or younger, that's weak, bad. You should get – I mean, that's against the law in most states. So lame. Don't do it. Bad. So if you're a band that does that, screw you. You're a bad band. But there's a whole other issue we don't even necessarily need to dig into here. But, like – like, what do you do with one of your favorite bands when the people are, like, real sleazeballs? Like, you know, Jimmy Page was having sex with a 14-year-old. You know, Iggy Pop was having sex with a 14-year-old. I still listen to the Stooges, you know what I mean? But then again, I don't know, maybe the 70s were different. But that's a whole different thing. In 2020, if you're getting funky with a 17 or 16-year-old, which I guess is technically rape, it is rape, don't do it. It's bad. It's a much more sticky situation when it's an 18 and a 19-year-old and a 30-year-old. And I think the big question is, what are we accusing people of, and what are we saying the punishment should be? Are we saying that they're doing illegal things when they're 30 and you know, taking 19-year-old girls into the back room, which is sleazy? Or are we just saying they're being kind of creepy? And are we saying there should be criminal punishments? Or are we just saying, as a consumer, I don't agree with the practices of this band or this label, so I'm not going to support them? And I think, like, no one's really clear. That being said, if you're a 30-year-old, you should be giving beer at 18 and 19-year-olds. That's creepy and weird. You know, I mean, 18 is really, 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 really young. Really young, you know. And the difference between 18 to 30 is as big as 10 to 18 almost. Like, it's a big, big difference. You know, 30 to 35, not that big of a difference. 30 to 40 isn't even really that big of a difference. I mean, it's a difference, but it's not 18 to 30, you know. But on the other hand, I mean, like, if there's not alcohol involved, and if a 30-year-old guy says to an 18-year-old girl, let's go in my van and do this or that, that's not illegal. So what are we saying they're guilty of? And it's creepy, and I think it's lame, but should that be the end of your career if you are a 30-year-old and you say to an 18-year-old girl, let's go do something in my van, and there's no alcohol or no force, and she says yes? You know, it's creepy, but should that be the end of your career? And then if it should be, then why don't we make the age of consent 21, not 18? You know what I mean? So those are the thoughts that I'm – I guess the main thought that I'm having is, as a society, I sort of feel as though we've somewhat lost aspect of, does the punishment fit the crime? And that being said, I'm not saying that the punishment of Berger doesn't fit, because, as I said, there were accusations against Lee, which I'm not going to get into. And there were accusations that – when this whole thing started, I was very pro-Berger. I'm like, so what if bands are acting creepy? I mean, what if a couple of bands are creeps? That's not the label's fault. They're not cops, you know. But on the other hand, is if the guys in the label did know some janky stuff was going on, they probably should have put a stop to it. You know what I mean? And the fact that they did kind of fold so fast, it doesn't look great for them. I have heard through the channels that Sean, who has not been accused of anything, is like just distraught, like absolutely distraught. And I feel, assuming he didn't do anything bad, which I haven't heard anything bad against him. Unless you could say the fact that Jenkins stuff was going on at the label, then he should have known about that. Maybe there's a colorable argument there. Maybe there is. Right now I feel bad, because I know the label was his heart and soul and his legacy and his entire project of his life, and now it's in ruins. Is it by his own fault or by other people's fault? I can't say. You know, it's tough to say. It's tough to say. And so I think this whole situation is very sticky. But I don't know if I can subscribe to the fact that just because a 30-year-old guy was doing stuff with a 19-year-old girl, that should be the end of the label and the end of him. And that's not the situation here. Here there was underage stuff. There was alcohol with minors. Not cool. But I think a bunch of different problems are getting bundled into one thing, and we're applying the same wrecking ball to many individual problems where the wrecking ball might not apply. But I could be wrong. That's my perspective.
I mean, no, I don't think you're wrong. You know, like, clearly there's like a whole universe here of music. I mean, this is a big label that put out a lot of stuff, a lot of different kinds of artists made up of, you know, different bands made of different kinds of people. And I think what you're feeling, John, is just like kind of the same thing that I'm feeling, and that I'm just like, what a waste. It's such a shame. I feel a little sick about it. You know, because you just feel like this is just so much creativity, and now it's just like, it's like you said, it's like the whole thing is just tainted now. And I find that to just be really, like, as an artist, I really find that to be a heartbreak. You know, but, you know, you can't have, in this day and age, you just can't have a whole scene where it's just accepted that older dudes are going to be plying young girls with alcohol and, like, taking advantage of them, taking advantage of the fact that they're, like, you know, considered, like, these cool dudes and they seem really powerful. And you just, you got to be more, you got just got to be cooler than that, man. You got to be cooler than that. But I know what you're saying, John. It's like, now, like, what? Like, now am I never supposed to listen to a No Bunny record? Like, maybe, I don't know, maybe. I'm with you. I have a lot of confusing thoughts about it. And then, like you're saying, like, how far do we take that? Well, then am I not allowed to listen to Iggy Pop? Am I not allowed to listen to Led Zeppelin? Chris and I had a moment on the couch the other day where, like, I really wanted to watch an old Woody Allen movie that I like. And I was like, am I not supposed to watch this Woody Allen movie? I'm probably not. Like, you know, given the kind of woman that I am and the kind of politics that are important to me, I really probably shouldn't watch a Woody Allen movie. It reminds me of, like, I'm now forgetting who it was, if it was like Nick Lowe, like somebody came out with this really cool, I thought really perceptive quote about Morrissey, because Morrissey had been in the news saying all kinds of garbage, just hateful garbage. He's turned into such a miserable creep in a lot of ways. And like, I could be wrong, but I feel like it was maybe Nick Lowe who was like, you know, those songs, those old Smith songs, like those, he was saying sort of like as a listener, as a digester of art, that you, the artist gives their art to you and then it kind of becomes yours. And it's sad and hard to have to give that back. Do you know, like if something comes out about the person that made it, that they're horrible, or you're like, oh, but I love that thing. I love that movie. I love that song. That meant something to me. Like that belongs to me. I hold that in my heart. Like now I'm supposed to just like, what? Like now I don't get to enjoy it anymore. It's such a heartbreak. But you know, this, I will say, just as a woman that was, you know, going to some of these shows, it definitely was like, it was like cool guys club. And like, I do feel like that had gotten more pronounced to me over the years. There had been like, you know, shows that I went to go see where it was like the OCs playing and there was like a woman on stage with them and I felt really comfortable. And then there were like a couple years went by and I was going to see the OCs play and suddenly there was like no longer a woman with them on stage. And it suddenly seemed very, very like cool guy scene. I mean, that might've just been my perception. I don't want to ramble on too much about it. I'll just say like this female imprint thing was such a such bullshit. Honestly, that is the thing that makes me feel like, well, fuck you. Like now I just don't care. Like if you actually think that, like, you know what? So women should just be on your label. Like you don't have to make an extra separate label for women. Like, are we not beyond that at this point? That's so insulting. Like we're going to make a whole separate like girls like playing area. Like what? No, like just, I mean, if you really were trying to revamp the label, just like have more women on the label. You don't have to create a separate ghetto for women. And, you know, I think people really thought it was like just smelled bad that I don't know much else about her. And I maybe should have looked her up a little bit more. But I know that people were upset that the woman that was supposed to be taking over as their new president was like a PR person. And I think that really stank to like shit to a lot of people because they were like, well, that just feels like a calculated cold business move. Like you're turning over the reins of your label to like a PR person. And again, maybe I should have looked her up more. Maybe she has like other beautiful, creative, artistic things going for her. But I know that people were really upset about that. It just seemed like they were just trying to save their brand. I think that's what that sort of seemed like to people, that it was just like sort of a calculated way to save their brand, rather than like any sort of sincere like revamping of what the label was. But I don't know, man. I'm like a big believer in like redemption. And John, even just what you said, I thought was so beautiful that you were like, I'm saying this, I'm saying these words, but like, I'm open to change. Like if I am proven wrong or someone talks to me about this and changes my mind, I'm open to like, I just, I'm a, I'm a, I'm a big believer in redemption and change. And I don't know what I would have liked to have seen happen here. I don't have answers, and I'm not saying that it's wrong that the label was disbanded. It's possible that maybe just this culture of mistreatment or taking advantage of women and girls was maybe just in the foundation of it, and maybe the whole thing needed to go. But I do hear what I feel like is at the heart of what you're saying, John, which is just that there is just something so sad and just where it's like now we just live in this world where just there's no redemption. We just have to slash and burn things, and the culture feels a little bit scary and out of control to me right now. But maybe that's, and this is the last thing I'll say. Sorry, I've been talking for a long time, but like maybe that's the thing, you know, life, world, culture, humanity, where it's all a pendulum. And maybe just, you know, the music scene has been swung so far in the wrong direction, really, in terms of like the treatment of women, how women are presented, how women are accepted, how they are welcomed, how they, you know, all of that has just been off. We're definitely learning that. It's just been off for a really long time. And like, you know, maybe the pendulum just has to swing in a very, very far in the other direction. And that, you know, I have to have some faith that we will land in the right place as a music scene. But these growing pains are very painful.
Well said, and fantastic metaphor. These growing pains are very painful. I agree 100%. I was going to add on to that, but I'm not going to. I will say, let's pat the punk rock space on the back. I will say, I think punk rock, like real punk, not necessarily like mainstream punk, but like punk, like I think we're doing a lot better than like these burger record places and like, you know, other places. I think, maybe I'm wrong, but it feels that way. You know what I mean? Maybe not. You disagree? Wow.
I don't know. Well, I'll say I can only speak from my own experience. As a young woman coming up in punk rock, you know, I feel really, really lucky to be able to say, like, nothing bad happened to me. I made some poor choices. I definitely had some encounters with men that made me feel bad. But I don't think, you know, I think in the way that like when you're a young adult and you're trying to figure out your way through relationships and sex, and you know, you just sometimes things go awry and you feel bad. That's I'm very, very lucky to say that that's the worst that happened to me. But you know, I do feel like, you know, as an artist, you know, I do feel like I, you know, was definitely subjected to a ton of sexism, just a ton of sexism. And, you know, I think what people are saying is that it's all parts of the same thing. Do you know? So as a punk, you know, a woman playing punk, I think you're right though. Maybe, I don't know. Or was punk so popular really before any of this calling out culture happened, or before women felt empowered to say something? And so maybe there's just a lot of punks that just sort of got away with their stuff before they just got in under the wire. Do you know what I'm saying? Maybe.
Fair enough. Well said. Well said. Let's go to the next topic, because I don't want to tack on to that, because that was extremely eloquent and well said. Here's a dick bag, Michael Graves, of formerly of the Misfits, of the 90s Misfits. Turns out Michael Graves is a Proud Boy, and I don't even mean that like figuratively. Like on his Twitter, he said, "I'm a proud Western chauvinist," which that's a weird phrase. And also, "I'm a Proud Boy," and he said that on his Twitter. I mean, on his Instagram. And at Punk News, I saw that. I'm like, seemed like a news story to me, you know. So I posted it, and it had an extremely wide ranging effect, which we'll get into in a minute. I dug through Michael Graves' Instagram. Turns out he also really likes Alex Jones. And if you don't know who Alex Jones is, like, Alex Jones is like either insane and like not in the cool way, like not in like the cool like Nick Blinko or Heath Moore style, like, but in like the, like, asshole way. Like, he thinks Sandy Hook was faked, which is like an insane thing to say.
But he's either insane. Believe that, or does he just say this garbage? I think he just says, I don't actually think he even believes it, which is almost worse. It's almost more disgusting. Sorry, go on.
I think that is more, I think that's sinister and evil. Yes. If you know, I mean, evil, you know, that's so Michael Graves thinks that guy is great, and we know he thinks he's great because he took a picture, multiple pictures of him hanging out and having fun. So, you know what I'm saying? Not cool. So, anyways, on Punk News, we're like, we literally just reposted, like, we didn't even put in any, what's the word I'm looking for? Inflection. We said, Michael Graves says he's a Proud Boy. Here's the picture. Who knew? You know? And it went crazy. It ended up getting Michael Graves banned from all his social media. He got wiped out. He started a new social media and actually, like, mentioned me, which I didn't really care, I guess. But that got wiped out, too. And he said, it looks like the punk rock lynch mob is out to get me, which I thought was semi-humorous. Because all we did was literally copy and paste what you said. Like, we didn't even say what you said was bad. We just said, here's what he said. You know what I mean? And so deep down, you know what you're saying is bad. Because if you're saying the lynch mob is out to get you, when we just copy and pasted what you said, that means you know what you're saying is bad.
Yes, I love that you were, like, such a catalyst in this. I didn't realize that part of the story. That's amazing.
I'm not saying his career is over, but and I'm not bragging here because I actually you can give me feedback on this. I feel somewhat bad about this. But I took out Michael Graves' social media simply by reposting it and alerted Instagram, which thereby alerted Facebook, which thereby alerted Twitter, and it wiped out all his social medias within like a couple of hours after us reposting this thing. I don't know if I feel great about that because listen. Proud Boys is bad. White Power is bad. White Chauvin is bad. Alex Jones is evil. I think Michael Graves is stupid, and I think he's wrong. But did he do anything bad, or did he just say bullshit? And if he just said bullshit, I don't know if I want the power or if I should have the power to annihilate people just because I disagree with what they're saying, even if what they're saying is objectively stupid and bad.
Well, you didn't. Those social media platforms made True. That decision. And like you're saying, all you did was just magnify. You just amplified the man's own words, his own statements. I don't think you have anything to feel bad about. Also, it is to say you're a Proud Boy, you're a white supremacist. That is evil. That is evil. I don't feel any sympathy for this dirtbag. None at all.
And you want to feel even less? He's got a concert scheduled for 2.5 weeks. With people.
Oh, good grief.
I was going to post about it to like be funny, but I'm like, I don't even need to. Actually, you think we should post about that to be funny?
Yes. You know? I mean, no, it's not even. I mean, whether it's funny or not, people can interpret it their own way, but yeah, you should definitely. I mean, that's newsworthy, I think.
I think he's actually like wacky that he doesn't believe coronavirus exists. Like, I think he thinks it's all like a scheme. It's crazy.
Well,
it's
I'm crazy. In Jersey now. He's a Jersey boy, and I'm in Jersey now, and I cannot believe it. I'm in the Northeast United States. I am not that far from New York City, and there are people. My husband literally had a neighbor tell him that she thought they were cooking the books on these COVID numbers, and my husband had to look at her and say, there was a refrigerator full of dead bodies 3 blocks from my apartment in New York City, and I don't want to talk about this with you. You know, like people out here, I don't know. They got something in the water or something. I got to watch my back.
well, there you go. Speaking of watching your back, the rules do not apply to people in New Jersey, and they don't apply to the mega rich. And here's why. This is one for the books, man. So a couple of weeks ago in the Hamptons, which is a very expensive part of New York, it's the Jersey Shore of New York. Actually, it's the Avalon of New York. There was a concert called the Safe and Sound Charity, and they were raising money hypothetically for children's charities with proceeds going to children's charities. And as we all knew, proceeds can be whatever you want it to be, you know, that's such a garbage figure. Tickets to this concert cost $1,250 to $25,000 a ticket. And the idea is you would drive up in your car and stay in your parking spot. But, of course, no one stayed in their parking spot. And everybody got up and danced and partied without any masks on whatsoever. It gets even wackier. The Chainsmokers headlined. Shame on them. Gets even wackier. There was a DJ set by the Goldman Sachs CEO David Solomon, who earlier in the week paid a $3.9 billion settlement with regards to fraud against Goldman Sachs. It gets even wackier. The township supervisor that okayed the event, Howard Zucker, played the show. He was the opening act, the township supervisor. And so New York State, Andrew Cuomo said, we're going to launch an investigation. I'm glad New York State's launching an investigation, but I don't have high hopes because these things kind of tend to peter out. And not to, you know, I'm not necessarily Mr. Who's the old guy with white hair that's like super socialist? Howard, what the hell's that guy's name? Noam Chomsky. I'm not Noam Chomsky Jr., but man, it really just does seem like the ultra rich do whatever they want and they never suffer for it ever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what to say. Just picture me with just like two fingers down my throat, just like bleh. That's like all I have to say about this whole situation. Also, who wants to see a DJ set by the CEO of Goldman Sachs? Just
rich bleh, people do.
That's just what the whole thing makes me want to puke. It's so gross.
What annoys me the most is this stupid thing happened, that they did it under the guise of helping out children. You're not helping out children, you're just being creeps. But what it is, I would say the fourth biggest annoyance here is that not only are you Mr. Evil investment guy doing fraud and ripping people off and this and that, but you also want to be Mr. Cool DJ as well. Like, you need to be Mr. Cool DJ. Like, can't you just be evil finance guy? You know what I mean? It's like, can't you just live in your castle in a suit and smoke cigars? Like, why do you have to be Mr. Cool DJ as well? It's like, it does feel like the French Revolution, and that, like, it's getting to the point where, and this is, if you ask me, this is all very much attributable to the president who has made his career doing this, is being a super rich guy and saying, I'm doing whatever I want and you can't stop me, and I'm just going to do whatever I want because you can't stop me. And without any shame. There's no shame anymore, you know? Mm-mm. I don't know.
Mm-mm. No, I mean, in terms of, like, the finance stuff, like, it does feel like – it really does feel like we can't stop these people. Or at least we're not doing a good job at it right now. People are just so scummy and breaking the law, and we can't stop it. But, like, the least we can do is just not buy tickets when this douchebag wants to play a DJ set. Just don't buy tickets. Who is going to this thing? It's just so asinine to me. The whole thing is so horrible.
Well, I agree with you. But listen, shame on the chain smokers for even entertaining this. Not that anyone thinks of their paradigm of integrity, but shame on you, chain smokers. Shame on you, you know.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to talk about Donald Trump or do we want to go to the happiness zone?
Wait, I need to just go back 1 second to this Michael Graves thing. Because, like, do we know where this – listen, I didn't spend a tremendous amount of time, but I tried to find a little bit of information about this guy's, like, original band. And, like, was this a punk band? Do you know anything? Do you know about the band he was in before he got hired to be in the Misfits?
No, I don't know anything about the band before.
Is this guy even a punk? What I'm saying is I want to disavow this guy as a punk because I don't even think he's a punk. He auditioned for the Misfits like he was an actor auditioning for a role. And then I think he got like respect in that world. But like, I don't even think this guy's a punk. And I don't even want to believe that he is. And I say we just fucking kick him out. He was never a punk to begin with.
All right. Everyone who agrees with kicking Michael Graves out of punk, say aye. Three, two, one, aye. He's out. I'm sorry, Michael, you're out. You're out.
We're taking your card away. We're cutting it up into tiny pieces.
All right, listen, we'll talk about Donald Trump real quick because I'm tired of talking. Well, actually, I am tired of talking about him, but we should keep talking about him just to drive the point home. This battle is not won, and some people are treating this battle like it's won. And I seem to recall people treating this battle like it was won 4 years ago, and things went really, really bad. So, you know what? Let's just keep fighting the battle for 3 more months. We can stick it out for 3 more months. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, listen, Donald Trump is getting sued by Neil Young. Not that he hasn't been sued before. Neil Young is suing Donald Trump because he's saying Donald Trump is using his music without proper licenses. Meanwhile, a bunch of artists have come together, including Pearl Jam, the Rolling Stones, Green Day, that are requiring political campaigns to get special licenses to play bands' music at political rallies. Now, I didn't even know this. I don't know a whole lot about performance rights, but apparently under BMI, there's this, the stadium license, what we've talked about. Like, when you go to a sports stadium, they're paying a fee to have, you know, Chumbawamba's I Get Knocked Down played over the speaker, or Back in Black, or Welcome to the Jungle. There's a special fee. I didn't know this, and I'm not exactly sure this is true, but this is what I've read briefly by a credible source, is that if you're a political campaign, then you have to get another special license on top of the general public performance venue license to play sound recordings, which I didn't even know about. And I'm not sure that's accurate, but I guess maybe it is. But then that brings the question is, oh, actually, okay, this makes sense now. Now I understand it. Okay, so there's a special license you have to get from BMI. However, BMI doesn't regulate that if you want that license, they say, okay, the price is X dollars, and if you pay that, then you get the license. Meanwhile, a bunch of artists have come together that are asking the different political committee campaigns, what do you call, like, the Republican Party and the Democrat Party? I'm looking it up right now. Like, what do you call, like, that organization?
The
committee. There you go. Yeah. So a bunch of artists have come together and signed an open public record to both those committees that saying, in addition to the BMI public performance license, and in addition to the political party BMI public performance license, you also need to get permission from the artists. The political committee has to get permission from the artists, which is separate of the BMI campaign, before using their music. And they're just asking the political campaigns, and would the political campaign agree to that? I mean, I don't know why they would or they wouldn't. Like, there's nothing to be gained by that, except for the artist saying they're a dick. But on the other hand, Trump has played so many bands' music, and they're like, we hate Trump, he's a dick. The Rolling Stones, namely, which, man, I love the Rolling Stones even more. But they don't care. They just keep doing it. Like, it doesn't hurt them, you know? Like, Trump keeps playing Bruce Springsteen. He keeps playing the Rolling Stones. He keeps playing Neil Young, and he just doesn't care. So I hope Neil Young wins his lawsuit. I don't know.
I mean, the best thing to me about this is, like, has Donald Trump ever listened to that song? Like, that, does he not know how to understand, like, the English language when it's set to music? Because that song is, like, the most harsh criticism of the exact kind of American capitalist callousness that Trump is the exact embodiment of. I mean, it couldn't be a more scathing view of, like, capitalist, shitty, selfish America. And, like, he doesn't even get, like, he doesn't even understand, like, he'd never listened to the song. It's, like, so hilarious to me, actually. Like, and that is, I don't know, the whole thing's such a mess. I mean, in terms of, like, the actual licensing, it is kind of hard, you know? You sign a bunch of things when you, like, have a publishing deal, and, like, if you were worried about your song getting used in a context that you weren't happy with, then, like, I don't know, did that need to be in your original contract? Do you need to have, like, the final say, or the ability to refuse the right for your music to be played? But, like, I mean, you would know more legally, John. It's like, can you go back in retrospect and be like, oh, wait, I meant, like, you could license my music, but not to this guy.
Well, that is strictly a contractual question, and here's the answer. Is BMI is the entity that is regulated by the government that maintains the record of who has licensed stuff to be allowed for public performance and all that kind of jazz. However, no band, probably not even U2, probably not even Pearl Jam, probably not even One Direction, has the weight to say to BMI, I want to renegotiate the terms of our license, because that license is extremely boilerplate. And the BMI answer is, well, listen, there's too many moving parts. We can't change it at all, because we can't monitor what changes you would request. So from the law aspect, you certainly could renegotiate that term. Mm-hmm. From the reality aspect, you can't, because no one has that much weight, you see.
Yep.
So, but
God, how upsetting would that be? If you wrote a song, like, and you wrote it as a protest song, and then it gets used by the exact kind of dickweeds that you were, like, protesting to begin with. I mean, if I were Neil Young, I would be, like, on fire inside. I'd be so freaking angry right now.
I think he is. I don't think Trump, like, he seems, well, Trump is a good argument as to why there isn't such a thing as smart or not smart. And I would argue that there are many, 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 many different kinds of intelligences. My mechanic is way better at fixing cars than I could ever be, you know. But could I write a better legal brief than my mechanic? Probably, you know. So there's not one kind of intelligence. And so Trump comes off as very dumb in interviews. And maybe he is dumb that way. But he's smart in the idea of his obliviousness, in that he's like, he's very good at looking at reality and saying, reality doesn't apply to me. And just for breaking the rules and doing what he wants to do. And I'm not saying that's good. I'm saying that's actually quite evil what he does. But I think he's somewhat aware that he's perverting these songs, and he's proud of that. And he draws power from that. And his fan base enjoys that. His fan base enjoys that he just does what he wants and has no morality, because by him being a completely immoral, evil person that does whatever he wants and steps on other people, it makes people who don't have very much power in their life feel like they have power.
Yeah. Yeah, well said.
And listen, 3 months, people, get out and vote. What can I say? And get him out of office. You know what I mean? Because even I'm going to talk to the listener out there that maybe say, well, I'm going to vote for Trump because I don't like Biden, or I'm not going to vote at all because I don't like Biden. You can do what you want, you know. But I'm telling you, Trump might make you think you're getting something, but he's not getting – look at what you've actually gotten from what he's done, aside from a sense of joy at insulting your political opponents. Take out the fact that he insults people, which doesn't really get you anything, and ask yourself, what am I really getting out of this deal? And I think you might find you're actually losing on the deal, you know.
Unless you're like a super billionaire.
Yeah, but, you know, it's out of control. Anyway, all right, listen. Let's see. A lot of great music has come. Let's play a tune and come back and enter the happiness zone. A lot of great music has come out. Hallie, I'm going to spin a wheel, and you tell me what you want to hear. You want to hear a Dan Burt track? You want to hear a Dan Burt track? I haven't played Dan Burt, I think.
John, after long consideration, I'll take the Dan Burt track.
So Dan Burt just put out this album. It's called Mesmerica. I don't love the title, but I love the album. The album's got a lot of skits in it, and I do kind of wish it didn't have quite as many skits in it. However, the music is exceptional. It's, without question, some of the best stuff he's ever done. This is a track called Building a Wall, and I think it's one of the best songs he ever wrote, and it's super fitting now. It's off Dan Burt's new album, Dan Burt and Kierwood Kramer, Mesmerica. He's going to headline Summer Soiree 4, which is going to be a video thing, which we're going to play in a couple of weeks. And this is Building a Wall. When we come back, we're going to hit some happy stories and then close this bad boy on down.
Ladies and gentlemen,
welcome.
Welcome in.
So here's the thing.
We got a situation. When El Presidente
starts to sing
the praises of
divine kings,
son of a
disciplinarian,
white guy Aryan, thing.
This
immigrant thoughtful punks, immigrant, immigrant sexy punks, immigrant, immigrant glamour punks, immigrant, immigrant resourceful punks, immigrant, immigrant human punks, not big, not clever.
And that was Dan Burton, chosen from our large collection of options. Listen, Halleyboy, a lot of annoying stuff this week, a lot of sad stuff, but some quite happy stuff as well, Halleyboy. Classic is Love. They're back after about 10 years, I think, surprisingly 10 years, or maybe 9. Jesse Michaels has reformed Classics of Love, but with two different people. It used to be Jesse Michaels and the Hard Girls, and now it's Jesse Michaels and Sharif Dumani and John somebody who plays drums. And honestly, before I listened to this EP, I'm like, I loved Classics of Love. The album was so amazing. It was my number one record of the year way back in like 2013 or whatever it was. I couldn't believe, like, I like Kamen Rider a lot. I love Operation Ivy. I thought Classics of Love was better than Operation Ivy. And so when he announced the new EP, I'm like, you know, don't get your hopes up too high. Like, he's not, the odds against him nailing it out of the park again are like nil. So it's going to be good. It's not going to be great. And I hit play, and it is. I don't feel I'm being hyperbolic here. It's amazing. Like, it is five tracks of savage hardcore, even more savage than the last Class of Love hardcore. It's almost like Flipper style hardcore played fast, with Jesse Michaels speaking from his soul with his amazing poetic ability, with just this white hot punk in the background. I don't know if it's genre wild, radically new, but it's so pure and so perfect. There's a reason why Jesse Michaels is Jesse Michaels, and I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah, this stuff is amazing. You did make me just internally laugh so hard, though, because you were like, Jesse Michaels did Op Ivy, then he did Kamen Rider, and then you were like, you know, this stuff, I like it. It's better than, and I was so sure you were going to say Kamen Rider, and then you went so big. You went so bold. You said you like it better than Op Ivy.
I do, and I love Op Ivy.
I was not expecting that, because Op Ivy is like, I think that's hard to top that. But I'm with you. This stuff is this is awesome. This stuff is totally great.
This was quite surprising, because Jesse is a unique and somewhat odd fellow, and he'll admit to that, which is one of the reasons why he's great. He was a few years ago. He's like, I'm probably not going to sing again because my voice is kind of giving out. And in episode 500, he talked about that, how honestly, like he figured out a way to make it work. And this is raw and savage and great. And I forget where else I was going with this, but it's freaking great. It's awesome. Jesse Michaels is the man. He is.
Yeah.
Let's see. Just a couple last stories to wrap this on up. I lost track of my list, and so let me pull it up right now while I drag this out and talk in a staccato style. And here is our next story, wrapping up the podcast. And the next story is...
I think I know what it is, but I'm kind of loving like what you're doing, so I'm just going to let it go on. Or do you want me to throw you a bone? Or do you want to just look it up in your notes and you can keep with the monotone style?
Go-Go's, they're back!
Yes!
The Go-Go's, they've got a documentary out. I haven't seen it yet, but apparently like it's like really great. Everyone's saying it's like an awesome, awesome documentary. And to that end, they released a new song. And it's their first song in about 10 years, although I don't think they've released an album for like 15 or 20 years. I know there's God Bless the Go-Go's, which I think is technically their final album to date.
I think that was like 2005, yeah.
So maybe this is their first song in nearly 20 years. Okay, yeah. So this is the first song since God Bless the Go-Go's. The new track is called Club Zero. It's real good. The Go-Go's are real good. And what a lot of people don't know, the Go-Go's are definitely punk, and they actually kind of split off from the Germs, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah, I mean, they had such success as a pop band, and I do think you have to kind of go back and listen to those first couple records to be like, oh no, like this is a punk band. Like it totally appealed to like a broader audience, but like, hey, like so does the Ramones. I mean, like who can you find on planet Earth that doesn't like want to sing along to like Blitzkrieg Bop? You know what I mean? Like it's got just like a broad appeal in that way. I think maybe just because they were like really beautiful girls playing like real hooks. I mean, these are like solid hooks. These like especially like that the stuff on Beauty and the Beat is just like fantastic. That is like Motown solid, just like classic hooky songwriting, like really, really powerful stuff. Now I've sort of forgotten where I was going, but yeah, this is amazing. And I'm very excited for this documentary because I am hoping it's going to like maybe just go into more details about like I knew the Germ stuff, but like I don't know. I think there's just so much interesting that's interesting here, like them coming out of punk, which I think a lot of people don't remember or know about. And then this was the first band of all women that had a number one hit on the Billboard charts that also wrote their own songs and played their own instruments. They were the first freaking band to do that of women. It's like completely amazing. They also had a female manager all those years, which was really, really unusual in the music industry at that time. So I think there's like so much just like fun. I'm hoping this documentary is going to be an awesome balance of just like shining a spotlight on how important these women were at like busting down so many boundaries for women in music, and also just like focusing on how fun this music is. It is timeless. It's so good.
I danced with Jane Wielden once.
I got to go out to dinner with all of them. Strangely, wow. They're amazing. They're amazing women. They're all awesome.
Well, you just blew my story away. what's this story? Tell me about this. Or is it like top secret? Like, are you
no?
Like
it's not top secret. No, you know, because I used to perform like on Broadway and off Broadway. They came to a show that I was in, and they loved it so much, which meant so much to me. I can't even tell you. I was like, I heard that they were coming to the show. I was nervous all day, all day. I was nervous as if like. I can't explain it. Like my heart was in my throat all day. I was so nervous that the Go-Go's were going to see me perform. I showed up to the theater that day with my copy of Beauty and the Beat on vinyl, like hoping that I would work up the nerve to ask them to sign it after the show, if they liked it enough and like hung around and wanted to meet us even. And then they loved the show. Like the show had like it was called De La Guarda. It had like an aerial element to it. So there was like a portion of the show where we would like grab members of the audience and pull them using like a harness situation. We'd pull them up into the air over the crowd and like fly them around. And we flew Jane, and she was like, loved it. And like, I don't know, I could go, I won't bore you. I could go on and on about it, but they loved the show. They signed my copy of Beauty and the Beat. They not only signed it, but like the whole record is just filled with them like glowing about how much they love the show. So like, it's not just like, they didn't just sign their names. It's like every single one of them signed like, Hallie, like we love the show. You're so amazing. Like you rock, girl. And like, they all signed it. And then they took us out to dinner afterwards. And it was like my dream come true. And I could basically just like died right there. It was amazing.
I'm sorry. In what universe is you and Jane Wielden flying around an auditorium with people watching so boring? Awesome. How is that boring?
Well, I don't know. It's just like my personal nostalgia, but it is completely amazing. Like, honestly, like one of the highlights of my life.
Well, listen, I think we got to shut this down. I don't think we can top that story. So this is the Punk News Podcast. You can reach the podcast at punknews.org. We're going to play a couple of tracks submitted by listeners or readers or listeners. And Hallie Bullitt, knocking it out of the park on this one, let me tell you.
I love it. I missed Adam, but this was so fun.
Adam will be back next week. And will the Punk News Podcast be reformatted to a small degree or a big degree? Stay tuned to find out.
my dad.